Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Are you packed and ready to hit the road to 2024? You know what they say, stay ready so you don't have to get ready. Well, tonight, we're talking about the black vote, election 2024, the issues and the politics. My guests are Winkuni Siyant, CEO and co-founder of Politicking, and Jordan Wilson, co-founder of Politicking. If you're ready to talk about the vote, or maybe you aren't ready, but you want to get ready, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can X me at HFisherWHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Winkuni, Jordan, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us, Harold. We're excited to be here.
Absolutely.
It's our pleasure.
Now, this event, The Road to 24, this is actually an event. It's happening at the Blackburn Center at Howard University. That's tomorrow all day. I promise we're going to talk a little more about that in a moment. But let us first get to the issues. Are black folks ready for the vote?
I mean, that's a question I think we would have to ask ourselves. Mm-hmm. If you're asking myself and Jordan, I think we're doing our best to get ready for the vote and to prepare others for the vote, which is why we're doing the Road to 2024 conference. However, I think by and large, a lot of black people are sleeping. And I think we have the fear of getting caught sleeping behind the wheel once again. And we saw that happen in 2020. And I'm concerned that that might happen again. And so I think that people need to pay attention. And when black and brown people don't pay attention, bad things happen in this country. And we've seen that as a trend repeated over and over again.
Why do you think that black and brown people, Jordan, are not paying attention? Why might they be sleeping?
I want to answer your first question.
Okay.
We need to be ready. I think we're not asleep. A lot of times we're so busy trying to save other people. I heard you talking earlier about Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And all I've been reading and all I was reading in 2020 was how black voters saved Biden. We mm-hmm. all saw it in South Carolina.
South Carolina,
all saw it in many of the southern and predominantly black states. What are we going to do for ourselves? You know, a lot of times black women especially have so many other interests on the line other than our own. So I wouldn't say we're sleeping. I would say we're certainly trying to advocate for issues other than ourselves. As you said, Winkuni, it's time to step up and it's time to be awake, not to replicate the same thing that we saw in 2020, which is so many people missed out on the opportunity to choose things that worked in their interest. And so I think it's an issue with prioritization. I think this year especially, we need to pay attention to how we can put ourselves as black voters first.
But there's so much information out there, you know, the news outlets, the obviously mass media and the social media, and there's mm-hmm. just so much news, from what's going on Capitol Hill to what's not going on Capitol Hill. There's Biden, there's Trump, there's DeSantis, there's all of this information. Do you think that black voters are overwhelmed? Are they oversaturated?
I think just as much information there is out there, Harold, there's that much disinformation. And that's exactly what we're trying to combat. I think oftentimes it's not that we're overwhelmed as much as sometimes we might be confused about what's actually the truth. And then the hyper-partisanness and the hyper-polarity of the political system makes it really hard to be able to excise out what's actually real and what's not. And so if you're watching like a Fox News or a CNN, nothing against either of them, but they obviously play to their audience. And so the way in which they're conveying the news and information is extremely, extremely partial. And so how can you get to the bottom of things as a black voter that might be trying to make up their mind on how does this affect me when the face of most media is white?
I was going to say, I also think that we're in the thick of it with local issues, especially, you know, the Flint water crisis is not over. A lot of the environmental justice issues that we see with flooding in Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, that's happening present day. I think so many Black voters are in the thick of actually facing issues that seem like almost fleeting to others, that sometimes it's hard to take a step back and say, instead of having to wait for days to get even a pack of fresh water like so many in Jackson, Mississippi were, instead of having to wait to hear about when schools are going to open, when they're overheating because there's issues with the power grid, I can show up to vote for my local election, my state election, in an enthusiastic way as I vote for my presidential election. I think so many people are, to your point, misinformed about the power they have to deal with issues that are present day.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Black vote and the road to 2024. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. I will take them as soon as they come in. Again, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Jordan, you just mentioned something that really struck me. When we look at local elections and, you know, the down ballot stuff, not the presidential stuff, but, you know, our local commissions, councils, and the like. When I look at the county council races in this area, and you look at the winners, and I'm just kind of, you know, throwing these numbers out, I don't have them right in front of me, but I know that you may have someone, the lead vote getter for a county council member, even if it's in a, you know, off of an election, off of a presidential election year, the winner may have 5,000 votes. We all know there are more than 5,000 people in
of course,
you know, in,
yeah.
You know, in, and I'm not talking about the county, in that, in the area that that person is running. Obviously, you have your you two have your constituency. Politicking has its constituency of those people who will make sure that they go to the polls. You know, if they have to vote on which flavor of gum is going to be at the polling place, they will vote.
Yeah.
But how do you get the people who are ambivalent? Especially young people, the 20-somethings, you know, the 30-somethings who are just kind of like, I guess I'll vote.
Yeah. Well, I guess not.
I would say, forget who's on the ballot. Let's think about what's on the ballot. Clean water is on the ballot. Good schools are on the ballot. I know you just talked about your daughter and that she graduated in 2020. So many students are limited. So many young people are limited from that type of future, because they don't pay attention to their local elections. Safety is on the ballot, which is an issue for me. I'm from Gary, Indiana, and as many people who might be listening know, it's an area that's been plagued with violence for pretty much all my life. And so I would say that the ambivalence is certainly not misunderstood. You know, it stands behind years of oppression, but it's also sort of rooted in this understanding or not really thinking that the things that make a better future for your community, your immediate life, are pretty much decided by those local elections. And so I would, of course, say that politicking, as you mentioned, has its constituency. We expose people to not only presidential candidates, not only federal candidates, but those local candidates. We've hosted mayoral forums. We've talked to governors. We really try to get to people on the ground level so that they understand these are the people that you'll see out and about at the grocery store. These are the people that you might even be able to talk on the phone. My mom was the mayor of my hometown, Gary, Indiana, and people would literally call her. Mm-hmm. You could never do that with Joe. I don't think I would be able to do that with Joe Biden ever. But I think understanding the access and the urgency that stands behind local elections is something that we're trying to do, at least, to really embattle that ambivalence.
I want to piggyback off of what Jordan said, because I like how she contextualized it. Like when she said safety is on the ballot, you know, education's on the ballot. I think that what we have to do is empower young people to think in that way, because what ends up happening in our communities is that we'll see an atrocity in the news and then we'll take to the streets or we'll take to Twitter and we'll get up and we'll get upset. But none of us ever takes the time to think about, how does this inform politics? So if you're mad about police brutality in your city, I'm not saying don't go out and protest. You should do that too. But also you need to vote for the sheriff. And people don't understand that there is some connectivity there between who is representing you in office and what you're seeing happen in your local communities. Okay, there's failing schools all around. Who is the superintendent? Are you going to school board meetings? Do you even know the names of these people? And so I think when people think about the things that really outrage them and that really disproportionately affect our communities, you have to think about who's actually governing this, who's actually legislating these bodies of law. And once you think about it in that way, you start to see very quickly why politics are so important.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the road to 2024 and the black vote, the politics and the issues. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Let's talk to Leon. Leon, you hung up. Give me a call back if you can. Let's go to Saheed calling from Maryland. Saheed, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. How you doing? Just to touch on what you guys are mentioning, I think to empower the young people of America, particularly people of color, there's not a belief system in place. They're not eager to vote, or nor do they care to vote for who they don't see every day in the immediate surrounding. So it's like having a blindfold in and telling them, yo, just pick or do a little bit of homework and choose who you think fits. And in the process of them doing so, because of their immediate elders in that community who've yet to see change from the people they've, you know, voted into office, it kind of trickles down. And for these kids or for the youth, again, there's no belief system in place. They don't believe in anything. And until that changes, they don't see any value in voting. They don't see any value in politics. It's similar to how they view sports. So that has to change.
But they actually care about sports, though. So what is the difference between sports and politics, and what are the similarities? Because I feel like young people care about sports almost more than politics.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And the reason why I use sports and politics is that in sports, you win or lose, they go home. It doesn't directly affect the fan or the person at that, right? But with politics, they're being asked to choose and pick and do some homework on who might not be who they present themselves to be. It's like going on the first day, you put out your best side. Then as the day goes on, 3 months, 6 months, your real side shows itself. I think it's what the youth are experiencing, in that they see police brutality every day, and it's like, we're doing our best. Okay, what does that look like? What does doing your best look like? Is there a change that'll take effect immediately, or do you have to wait a year, 2 years, 4 years, 10 years for a change, a simple change that requires signature?
It's interesting, Saheed, you know, for those of us of a certain age, and I think you just gave some validity to it, that often what we say about younger people is that it is the microwave generation. They want it now. And I think you just said that, and we realize that as it relates to voting, short of the changing of the guard and the replacing one set of administrators, people on the job with the next, once there's the exchange of power, yes, these things do definitely take time. But Saheed, real quick, Saheed, let me ask you, how old are you?
I'm 40, sir.
You're 40. Yeah. Okay, yeah, you're still young. Are you going to vote?
Yes, sir.
Oh, well, then.
All right. I just wanted to speak to his point. It's powerful, and I think one thing that we could do, especially in talking to the generation, us millennials, because when Cooney and I are both millennials as well, Saheed, we all have the most up-to-date version of iOS. I have no clue what that does to all aspects of my phone.
Oh, you mean the operating system for Apple.
But okay. I know it's necessary. I don't know what it does to my email. I can't tell you the list, the itemized features that are on my phone, but I know it's necessary for things to continue functioning. We have to take a realistic look at politics that way. We know, as you said, Wankuni, it's necessary to choose governing individuals. We just have to look at the facts.
Saheed, thank you so much for your phone call. Jerome from Woodbridge, Jason calling from Virginia. We are going to talk to both of you. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And as I mentioned, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more after the break, but, of course, the road to 2024 is at the Blackburn Center at Howard University tomorrow. It's all day, right here on campus. You don't want to miss that. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Iron Waller is in for John Mons. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about the black vote, election 2024, the issues and the politics. My guests are Wankuni Siyant, CEO and founder of Politicking, and Jordan Wilson, co-founder of Politicking. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jason calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Jason. What's on your mind?
Their true color of their skin.
What's this now?
What?
You're on the air.
I was saying that we see all these rioting, protesting, and brown people that are angry because they feel inferior of how they have been treated by people everywhere. And that is wrong because third president of the United States of America, Thomas Jefferson, spoke, all men are created equal, meaning that includes mankind, which includes women. So that does not mean that just because one is a woman or one is a man, that or the color of their skin or where they were born, that does not mean that they can say that they are better than somebody else. Because look at the life of great leaders, how they lived a life of poverty and rose to be great legends.
So Jason, let me stop you there. I mean, certainly, you know, as it relates to, you know, the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, great documents. They're in black and white or black and beige because the documents are old. But how people truly feel about them, the reality of how black and brown people in this country have been treated, obviously is spelled out in the history that, you know, that has helped to build this country. That's all I'm going to say about that. However, I'm going to let Wankuni respond to your statement as well as Jordan. So Wankuni, I'm going to let you have the floor.
Sure, Harold. So I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. And, you know, I think what you're saying is that, you know, the Constitution was designed in a certain way. And then in that Constitution, it says that people are born with inalienable rights. And one of those rights is the right to vote. But I think we have to be honest with ourselves and knowing that in this society, unfortunately, black and brown people have never been treated like equals. Even today, I think we are still struggling to achieve those rights that were listed by our founding fathers. And that's unfortunate. But one of the ways that we can certainly better and embody change in this country is through that right to vote. And that's why we want to ensure that each and every person takes that step. But not only is voting, but voting in an educated and informed fashion. And so creating tools like Politicking to ensure that you're able to cast a vote for whoever you want to cast a vote for, we want to make sure that that's what's happening. But unfortunately, in black and brown communities, we have some of the lowest voting rates in the country. And we need to figure out why that is and figuring out how to move forward in really equalizing our political capital in this country.
In law school, we learned about textualism versus developmentism. And textualism looks, to Jason's point, to the plain meaning of the Constitution and essentially interprets that in today's terms, I think it'd be almost impossible to do that. I'm not a textualist. I look towards developing, to your point. And that's what politicking is. We understand we don't live in the same world that the third president, Thomas Jefferson, lived in. And we certainly don't accept a lot of his beliefs back then. We don't believe that we're less than human. We are not to be enslaved. We don't believe that women are less than equal. We are to be professionals and the same class as men. And we don't believe even today that just because the text says all men are created equal, our government will administer leadership that shows that. That's what politicking represents. A person making a decision based on whoever they think is the person who will actually uplift our people according to the Constitution. We don't ask people to decide who it is. We don't ask people to decide which party it is. We really don't. But we do ask people to think about who's really making decisions for the people or for your interests. And so to your point, sounds like he's a bit of a textualist, and that's okay. You know, and again, in legal theory, there are different ways to interpret the Constitution. We just choose to think that there's a way to advance that ideal and that it's not always being done today.
And I would also argue, Jason, before I let you go, that, you know, particularly for communities of color, that you don't have to look very, very far to see that in some cases that whatever powers that be are making it difficult for you to vote. There may be fewer polling stations. The issue about, mail-in voting, all of these laws that have been bubbling up over the past 5 years or so, where it has made it very, very difficult for communities of color to vote. That in and of itself, in addition to the gutting of the Voting Rights Act, and we could do a whole show just on that. Right. And so I would agree that to Jordan's point, yes, it's black and white in the Constitution, but there are many shades of gray when it comes to voting in this country that a lot of people are struggling with. And I can say, from my position, I've lived in 7 states since graduating from college. I have registered to vote in every state legally that I have lived in, because for me, nothing and no one is going to prevent me from voting, because that's what I did. You move to a state, you figure out where the job is, you get yourself an apartment, and you register to vote.
Harold, can I say one thing?
Go right ahead. Jason, thank you so much. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Jason. You know, one thing that frustrates me so much about, you know, people my age and people that are younger than me is that they don't see the importance of voting in that way. And it frustrates me because if you know the history of the sacrifices that our forefathers, I'm talking about people that look like us, had to make to get us that right. I mean, when I really think about having to memorize the preamble just to be able to get a right to vote, I mean, the types of hoops they used to make black people jump through just to get the right to vote.
Poll taxes.
I mean, yeah. So many things, you know, tell people you can't learn to read and write, but oh, now you got to learn how to vote. If you don't know how to read and write, you can't vote. So there were so many barriers that were in our way. And now, I'm not going to say that these barriers have been totally neutralized, because we know that there's still some voter disenfranchisement going on. But by and large, we have far better access to being able to cast a poll. And we're still not doing it in the same way. And so I wonder what it's going to take for us to really seize that opportunity. I wish more people felt the conviction that you do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I had to, because my daddy would have beat me if I didn't.
That's good parenting.
Yeah.
yes, there's that part. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Jerome. Jerome, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you all this evening?
Just fine, thank
good
you.
Go right ahead.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. If I make 2 comments, one, voting, electoral votes, and our personal votes. Trump-Clinton race, Hillary won the popular vote. Electoral votes, Trump won. And I think we all need, a lot of us need to get the distinction between our personal vote and the electoral votes, which determines the presidency just about. And we missed out on that because a lot of us don't understand the electoral vote process and the number of states, how it works for each state. And I think that's major when I vote. Then also as a person working in the criminal justice system, adult prison, adult probation, juvenile probation. And as I listen to you with your topics, and I still work with our young men and women today, and I wish you could see the pain that we go through working in these systems with these young people. Yep. We need more people. Excuse me?
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
And I wish that people on it could have access to come in and actually see the behaviors of our young people.
Break that down real quick for me. What do you mean by that? See the behaviors of our young people.
We have been in this system about 18 years.
Okay.
And like I said, I've seen both sides, the adult and juvenile. And when I hear a lot of people that I speak to say the system fails, the system failed a lot of young people. It's not perfect. Not by no means. It's not perfect. But we have some people that work in these systems that actually care for these young men and women.
Yeah.
They care. And the verbal abuse that we go through every day, trying to get these young men and women to see how just the basic form of education can probably put you on a path to go somewhere positive. Like you were just saying a few moments ago, if I may, sports. Excellent for us. With my own son, educate yourself first.
So let me say this, Jerome, because I don't want to get too far down in the weeds, and I'm going to wait and make sure that we stay on the same track. And I do believe that I think the point that you're making, particularly as it relates to, let's talk about juvenile crime and the like, and if, you know, I still believe that education is the key. I'm sitting in a studio right now with two exceptionally well-educated Black women who happened to go to, you know, to Howard University. But, you know, beyond the HU plug, that yes, you know, education can set you free. There is no question about that. But in addition to that education, as I have done, and as Jordan, you know, mentioned earlier, you have to educate your children to vote as well, because there is power in that particular vote. And I use this example, you know, Congresswoman Lauren Boebert won in Colorado by just over 500 votes to be reelected in Congress. Now, your vote may just be one. You could have been vote 500, vote 499. But if there had been, you know, just over 500 votes of people who voted against her, she would have lost. Or there could have been 500 more people who voted for her to get her that 1,000 vote. But if you are not that one vote, if you do not have that conversation with young people, then you will continue to have that same kind of lamentable situation that you have discussed. Go ahead, Jordan.
Let's keep it honest, Jerome. Like, he's being real. There are some systems that we live in, that we engage in, that are honestly relics of racism. And the Electoral College is one. The Constitution obviously says 538 electors appoint the president. That's the Electoral College. They're selected by the state. And to be honest with you, I think the last five presidents actually had less of the popular vote, but more of the Electoral College, which means the presidential choices were not representative of the people. That's frustrating for Black people, especially if it seems to not be a person who represents us, even more frustrating. Mass incarceration is a system that is set up systemically against us. We have, between Wankuni and I, all the JDs, the MPHs, the bachelor degrees, all of that. But I'll be the first to say even higher education can be a system that works against Black people. But I do want to bring it back to your point, Harold. That does not have to be the case, mm-hmm. in the sense that we can vote for our interests and against the way that those systems do not work for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Jerome, I've got to go, but thank you so much. Keep doing the work that you're doing with these young people. I appreciate your time. One of the things I did want to say before I go back to the phone lines, and this just happened this past weekend. I was sitting in my car about to run errands, and a woman was walking up the sidewalk, and she had leaflets in her hand, and she walked up my steps, and I just watched her. And then halfway up the steps, I said, I'm not home. I'm in my car. So she comes to my car. Well, guess what? She's running for the Councilmatic district where I live.
Aww. That's awesome.
And the thing that is so important is when someone comes to your house and says, I'm running for council, I'm running for delegate, I'm running for dog catcher, donut maker, whatever, that's your opportunity to ask them, what do you stand for?
What are you going to do for me?
Yeah, why should I vote for you? Yeah, I saw the picture of your husband and a new baby, and I'm glad.
Yeah,
I am glad about that. And your pamphlet is green and white. What's your political party? I don't want you to ask me what my concerns are for my neighborhood, because I'm going to tell you. But first, I want to know, what do you stand for?
Mm-hmm.
And I like her, you know, but, you know.
Is she going to govern?
There you go.
But Harold, you said something pivotal and I wanted to dig into it more. You said, what's your political party? See, I don't even think that's important, because sometimes your political party doesn't inform your values. So I think a lot of the times, the reason why young people also don't want to get involved in politics, they're like, well, the Democratic Party has failed and the Republican Party has failed me. And so they're like, I don't like either, so I'm not participating. No, I don't care what party you want to believe in. I don't care if you want to be a third party, independent, green party, whoever you want to be. If you want to create your own political ideology, I think you just got to figure out what you stand for, what you're against, and figure out who aligns with you, because not all Democrats think the same, not all Republicans think the same, and not all Black people are a monolith.
That's true.
And so I want to make sure that people aren't just so fixated on political parties in 2024. Focus on the issues. What aligns with you? The way that we think as young people and the way that our parents might think, we might be the same political party, but I could tell you we have two different views. So we have to figure out who's the right candidate for us. And when I say us, whoever you are, you know, because we're not all the same. But I just think that it's bigger than political parties, but it's really about finding a candidate that suits you, but also not just electing them, holding them accountable. They said they were going to do X, Y, and Z. She said she was going to clean out your gutters and fix that hole and X, Y, and Z. But then did she do it? And then did you show up to the community meeting to say, hey, Miss Mama, you didn't do this, this, and this. And you told us that you were going to do it within the first 90 days in office. And it's day 103. And so having those types of conversations are important. And accountability is so important. I always say you cannot hold people accountable if you don't know their name. I'm always asking people, what's the name of your mayor? Well, I don't know. That's your problem.
Yeah.
So, but that's something politicking is here to fix.
For
yeah.
Sure. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that.
Download it.
And that is really, really important because, and we've been having this conversation now for about the past month about, you know, age and the like. And, you know, and Mitt Romney yesterday says he's not going to run because he says it's time for him to pass the torch. And when we're talking about young people who have the energy, the chutzpah to be involved, because I mean, let's be honest, sometimes
they're not young, younger people are not going to listen to older people. They are going to listen to their peers.
What?
You know,
really?
It's, see, within this, exactly. You are not getting an allowance. Let me go. Let me go to the phone line, 202-319-7810. Brandon, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you, though, Mr. Fisher, Mr. Harris. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm glad that you always have a good platform.
Thank you.
The young ladies that you're speaking with, you know, I really hear you. I hear you. And we're talking about votes. I want to know, just like Jason said what he said, you have a lot of brothers of color have passion, too. But they say that we're mentally ill when we show passion. Something is wrong with us, right? You know, because we can go back to January the 6th and fix all that. Hmm. We didn't go up in there, okay? Just to answer his question, okay? But for this, when we going to take a chance to say, don't vote, so we can see how important our vote truly is for what we want? Because they ain't never give us what we need. What we need, when we can stand back, take a chance on a 4 years, and let them run it. Okay, and we just sit back. We talking about the mindset of the ballot and the bullet now.
So, Brandon, let me.
Hold up. Let me finish. Let me finish.
Well, go ahead. Well, hold on. It's my show, so I can let whoever finish when they want to. But I will let you have the next 15 seconds to make your point, because you said something that actually really struck me. But go ahead, make your point.
I know. I do. I struck your mind a lot when I talk to you. Look, now, we're talking about the mindset of the ballot and the bullet. We got one president saying make America great again.
Right.
We say one of them, and then the other one said that Biden said that you ain't black if you don't vote for me. Okay? So them statements sticks out. And now hip-hop owes a lot of the youth votes.
Okay.
They flipping hip-hop now. They flipping it because their children love it. Okay? We talking about the young votes now. Okay, but when we gonna take a step back? We talking about reparation ain't never been answered yet.
So let me, I get you. So Brandon, thank you. Brandon said something, and it took me all the way back to the Million Man March. That when that happened, and you know, we had a lot of black men who came to DC for that.
Yeah.
But then you had a lot of other black men who stayed home on that day. And on that day, I was in Columbus, Ohio at the time. And on that day, the buses didn't run right.
Mm.
On that day, Columbus City government had to shut down half of its operations. Why? Because like Brandon just said, black people did not show up.
Mm.
And so if you apply that, you know, when Cooney, to the vote,
yeah,
it may sound good in theory, but to me, black people not showing up to vote, whether it's in 2024 or for dog catcher, is a frightening prospect
to me.
That's
a dangerous America. That's a dangerous America. That's an America that will be unchecked. There will be no checks and balances, and there's a reason for that, right? That's an America that will be governed by white supremacy even more than we're already seeing. So I would be fearful of that reality. But to what he said about hip-hop, that was so poignant.
Mm-hmm.
Our first panel at tomorrow's conference is hip-hop and politics. Not only are we commemorating hip-hop's 50th anniversary, but we wanted to do so on the eve of CBC to show that hip-hop has been integrally bound with politics ever since its inception. It was the original voice of the ghetto. It was the original voice of outcry and systemic injustice. When we had our people talking about the missed opportunities that they had growing up in the hood and the war on drugs and the best way they knew how, that's politics, right? And that's deep. And they actually made it popular, right? And they brought it to the front of the news. And so the intersection between hip hop and politics is so large, and he's right about that. But I think that would be very, very dangerous for us to say, hey, we're going to withhold, because at that point, we might as well leave. Because at that point, we're not even taking a stand to lend our voice to the things that affect us directly. And that's the type of America they will want. But that's not the type of America we could allow. We were just sitting here talking about how many barriers were in place for people to vote. For us to just willingly give that up, I can't do it.
I don't think that he's describing something that hasn't happened, though. I think that's a lot of what happened. Yeah, I think that happens. Yeah, that happened in 2016. That happened in my last local election in Gary, Indiana. That happens. You know, apathy, to his point, is absolutely a statement in an equal and sometimes even louder way that showing up to vote is. But I think we're representing, as the co-founders of Politicking, just a different effort. You know, I know that you can sit back at home and try to say this is actually making a statement about what I don't want. I think that showing up to vote is also a way to do that. People say, you know, find out something that you want to vote for as your motivation. I actually show up to vote for things I don't want. I don't want people who don't actually take governing seriously. I don't want people who don't take integrity in office seriously. I don't want people, to your point, who uphold white supremacy. I don't want that. And so that's what keeps me showing up to vote. And I understand, again, that sometimes elected officials don't act like they value black votes. But frankly, it's our election to show up for. Yeah. It's our election to continue running for office in. I think we have to continue to assert ownership over election at every level. And that's just the approach Politicking is continue to advocate for.
Brandon, thank you so much for your phone call. One other thing before I forget, and I should have mentioned this earlier, because we talked about sheriffs and we talked about presidents, right, and we talked about, please don't forget about judges.
Yes. Yeah.
Please don't forget about judges. Please do not forget about prosecutors, or what we call in our area, state's attorneys, in the state of Maryland, or in Virginia, Commonwealth's attorneys. But the bottom line is, yeah, you vote for those prosecutors. But the judges, and that's the hard thing, to, because you don't, unless you get called for jury duty, or you've been or you're part of a civil, civil
organization.
If you get civil called panel. For civil
yeah.
action,
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
or if you get accused of a crime,
yeah,
you're not going to see a judge,
right?
You know, those,
some people spend their whole life avoiding them.
Yeah. or trying to. Yeah, yeah.
I've had my share of jury duty, Lord knows.
Yeah.
But
black people show up for jury duty too. Yeah. I think that's extremely important.
Yeah, it really, really is. So let me get Larry real quick. Larry, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. Two things. One, help your kids have a political opinion. My son turned 20 when Obama was in election, and I made him go off the street, he and his friend, and go vote however they want to vote, but have them give them a political opinion. I helped the guy run for office in Detroit when I was 15. Number two, I came to my success through the Job Corps program. And while I was in the Job Corps program, I was successful enough to get a job with Amtrak. And they said, we need you to come on Capitol Hill to the Rayburn Building as a reason why not to cut the Job Corps program, because I wrote to Congress and said, if you cut the program, you are eliminating future taxpayers. Mm. So give them a political opinion and then support local and national candidates.
Mm. There you go. Larry, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Real quick, the event tomorrow, is there a website or information that I can post and that you can share right now?
If you want, go to Politicking, the app on Instagram. You'll be able to click the Eventbrite link. And if you just go on Eventbrite generally, you'll be able to find the Road to 2024. Tickets are on sale up until tomorrow. And so I would encourage anybody listening to show up. There are so many incredible panels that don't just embody politics in the sense of voting for candidates, but the issues. My fiance is here and he's in finance, and he'll be talking about real estate, the politics of real estate, and how that really determines black wealth. There are panels on cannabis. My mom is also going to show up to talk about the integrity of the voter system, which we've talked about at great lengths. But I think we're taking such an issue focused approach, a nonpartisan approach, to help people understand the Road to 2024 isn't showing up next November to vote for whoever. but it's starting now, thinking about the issues in state and locals this year and on to the presidential election of next year. So we'll be in Blackburn Auditorium tomorrow from 8:30 a.m. until 5 p.m. I heard you say all day. If some folks show up at 6 p.m.,
oh, yeah,
we're not going to be there. They're going to miss something.
We might be at the show after party. Yeah. The after party is from 8 p.m. to midnight with DJ Quicksilver. So y'all come holler at him. Yeah. But like Jordan said, it's imperative that y'all come out tomorrow and have a good time with us. Make sure you check us out at Politicking. Yeah. You can find all the information and lock in with us. We'll see you tomorrow.
And I will make sure that I post this on our website.
We want to see you tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, I'll be working. Oh, that's right. At the BMW, Black Man Working and voting. And so then that's there's right. that. Wincuni Sion and Jordan Wilson, thank you so much. It has been an absolute pleasure to have both of you on. I have faith in the future.
Thank you, Harold. Yes, we appreciate you so much.
Thank you for your work, seriously.
Absolutely. Thank you. That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, September 14th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.